Hey East Meets West listeners. In this episode, Albert and I break down the news that Arm, the world's leading semiconductor IP company, is going public later this year in an IPO. Valued at between $30 and some would say $70 billion, this makes Arm the largest announced IPO for 2023 and one of the biggest in several years. Against the backdrop of China and the US's competition for computer chips and semiconductors, Arm's IPO is coming at an important time for the industry and the future opportunities for AI technology. Keep listening and enjoy. Welcome to the East Meets West podcast, a podcast about understanding Asia tech and how Asia tech affects the world. My name is Dan. Joining me as always is Albert from Astral Ventures. How are you doing, Albert?
Dan, going good. Once again, Mr. Worldwide, you are in another country. What is going on?
Yes, not much is going on. I kind of ran home, took the metro. Not a grab this time, Albert, to get from the office to my hotel, calling in from Indonesia. It's a really hot day, sweating a bit, but looking forward to talking about this week's episode, Albert. This is a really good one. I hadn't been keeping abreast of the latest news in semiconductors and microchips, but this is a big deal that's hitting the market at the moment. So why don't you take us through why we're talking about Arm, why we're talking about SoftBank, Albert, today?
Yeah, this is a super interesting episode. So we're talking about Arm, which is one of the subsidiaries of SoftBank. Obviously, if you've listened to our SoftBank episode, and definitely check that out, where we talk about how SoftBank took Arm private a number of years ago. They're now looking to float back on market and become public. You know, SoftBank's looking for a bit of a return on their investment. Arm's looking to get a bit of capital into the business. This is potentially going to be one of the largest IPOs of the decade in a market, you know, the past couple of years where IPOs have really kind of dried out. It's pretty exciting to see not only a big IPO come to market, but a big IPO in the semiconductor, you know, CPU, GPU industry.
Yes, there's a lot to unpack there, Albert, but let's maybe start with a little bit about Arm. So Arm is, you know, one of the leading largest chip designers in the world. In 2016, they were acquired by SoftBank, which is a private equity fund in Japan, took control of them in 2016. And since then, there's actually been a little bit of news there where there's been talks earlier this year about NVIDIA, the other big microchip semiconductor designer in the space, looking to acquire them for $40 billion. That deal has fallen over for a number of reasons, but most likely seems to be just anti-monopoly rules and regulations. Obviously, having two of the biggest chip designers in the world joining Arm's, it's got some antitrust issues. So that deal's fallen over. And now you've got this IPO coming in to really inject new funds, new life into Arm as a business. Is there anything I kind of missed out there in terms of overviewing what is Arm first, Albert?
No, that's perfect. I think if you've never really heard of Arm, I think a good kind of anchor point is that they work really closely with Apple to design Apple's silicon chips. So if you're using an iPhone, if you're using, you know, like one of the M1 MacBook Pros, or one of the really, really new age MacBooks, one of the Apple cores on your iPhone, they've been designed with Arm. So Apple design their silicon chips with Arm, and then they get them manufactured by TSMC or Samsung. So that's kind of where Arm play and how you've interacted with Arm. It's worth kind of calling out, though, that they describe themselves as like the every product designer or every product chip, sorry. Not being particularly verbose, it is quite late at night, but you can find Arm products in basically any kind of device, a phone, a TV, a microwave, a car now. They really build these computer chips and these processors, or design these processors, sorry, for basically any device now. And you know, to give some numbers around how pervasive they've been, they've got about a 95% market share when it comes to mobile. So this is truly a business that is everywhere. You just can't see it.
Yeah, it's a really great product. It's one of those ones, you know, it's like YKK, the leading brand for zippers, where if you look at every zipper, you can see YKK on the brand, but you just never think about it. You never look that deep. But inside all of our tech that we're using, and there's some of the big names out there, Apple, Albert, you were mentioning, but also across Amazon devices, Google devices, and even Tesla cars, all of them use, you know, ARM IP, ARM designed chips. And I guess where they've really been a market leader is this kind of generic, maybe sounds a little bit like a put down, but it is kind of this very generic but very high quality chip design, which is then used across, you know, general purpose across all kinds of devices. And that is incredibly successful. They're in billions and billions of devices. So it is, you know, a very, very valuable company. But Albert, if we now sort of switch the lens a little bit to talk about, you know, how does this rank in the pantheon of IPO deals? If you're just looking at US IPOs in the last decade, Alibaba, $25 billion in 2014, Uber, $8 billion in 2019, Coupang, you know, an episode we did quite recently on them, 2001, $4.6 billion. What do you sort of think? What does this mean for IPOs more generally, if we just take a zoomed out look and focus on that question for a second?
Yeah, I think the numbers that you've called out there aren't valuation, but rather the money that they raise in in the IPO. So I'm not sure how much ARM is looking to raise, but I think they're reporting around like the low, like $8 billion. So that still would put it up there in terms of like the absolute magnitude of a top. IPO. And so I think you'd mentioned in your just now, Uber, you know, raised about a very similar amount of their IPO. That kind of stack ranks it at like that valuation of what Uber was. And I think Uber went public at like a $60 or $70 billion valuation off the top of my head. And so that really shows like how enormous this business is. Just to put some like revenue on it, you know, they're obviously still private, but because SoftBank is public, there's some information that are about a $3 billion run rate USD. And so they're looking to do about just over $3 billion this year. Last year, they clocked over just $2.7 billion. When you factor in the exchange rate, they are profitable. So it looks like this is one of those really hot IPOs that are going to come into market, potentially add a bit of a shock in a good way to public markets.
Yeah, when I think of IPOs, there's kind of this inflection point where I think it's much more about the news and the hype than anything substantial, but you know, almost always there'll be talk about the IPO price and then whether or not the IPO exceeds that IPO price or flops, you know. And I don't think there's anything really substantial there because, you know, when you look in the long term, you know, whatever the IPO price was really doesn't have much of a correlation with how successful the business becomes or doesn't become. But Albert, if we just wanted to have a bit of fun, you know, do you think that ARM is an IPO that's going to exceed expectations or maybe flop a little bit? What's your take at the moment?
It's a good, really good question. I think to answer it straight off, I reckon it's going to exceed expectations. And you're right, like you probably shouldn't read too much into the price of an IPO when it opens and closes, because like the price of IPO is whatever bank's going to underwrite it. And then however the market reacts to that. And so you generally hope that it rises, but we've obviously seen IPOs, you know, not do particularly well. I think the Facebook IPO didn't do that well. And so, you know, there's obviously long-term value creation regardless of how IPO goes. I think the reasons why I think ARM is going to do really well, a couple of reasons. The first is like semiconductor designs, obviously a very hot space. Every device now has some sort of computer processor in it, TV, your cars, your microwaves, even your vacuum cleaners, you know, your phone, your Kindles, etc. And so devices are only going to get more connected. And when you've got a business like ARM, who is so pervasive in the kind of CPUs it can produce, it can easily take this incredibly horizontal view of different industries and just apply that same technology. So maybe I'll break it down in a really easy way to show how like pervasive this design is. If you've developed some sort of like electronic, whether it's like a vacuum cleaner or like a smart bin or a new gaming device or a speaker, you need some sort of CPU. You can either design that CPU yourself or you can get a CPU off the shelf in the same way that you get any other part off the shelf. You're going to get it off the shelf, which is the easiest thing to do. You're going to go to ARM, and you might need some like specifications modified or redesigned. You can do that with ARM's designers. They'll help you redesign parts of their chip to make it, you know, very specific and customized for your design. So not only could you just buy something off the shelf that fits easily into your product, you can also co-design something based on one of their existing products. So that shows how like easily applicable and horizontal this business is, which I think will make it a super successful IPO. I think there's also like kind of political and you know, geopolitical tensions we can add to it with like TSMC in China, Nvidia in the US, and this is a British company. And, you know, that kind of overlay makes it super interesting because it is listing in the US, but we don't have to go into that. It's just a consideration.
Yeah, and a really interesting comparison point, I think, is Nvidia, because when you really dive deep into the businesses, there are different strategies at play, different products, really. On a surface level, you know, a comparison that I'm drawing and thinking about, Albert, is how ARM has sort of got this generic, again, not a put down, but a generic design which is used ubiquitously across a whole multitude of products. And that's a really interesting strategy in play because you're going for breadth. And not saying that Nvidia is not as broad as ARM, but they do have much more of a focus on GPUs, which are about 80% of Nvidia's primary revenue. They got a focus on gaming, really hardcore processors that are used for, you know, Bitcoin mining. And now more recently, what's come out is like a real focus by Nvidia on AI. And you know, when you think about some of the big news stories lately about AI and ChatGPT, underpinning ChatGPT is a whole lot of Nvidia designed chips and hardware. So when I'm thinking about that kind of, for lack of a better word, specialization by Nvidia compared to the more generic approach or broad approach that ARM is taking, I am really quite interested to see which way they're both going to go. Again, I know we're in the prism of sort of IPOs and stock prices, but you know, over the last 6 months or so, Nvidia's gone up about 100% in terms of their stock price. So they're doing very, very well. And so I'm wondering if there's a thought within the ARM side that, yes, that deal with Nvidia collapsed, but now is maybe a right time when everyone's talking about AI, everyone's talking about the tech underpinning it. Now is a good time to have an IPO, which will build up the hype and possibly make it exceed expectations, going back to that original question.
Yeah, I think, is your question about like how these two companies compete?
No, I was using it more as a comparison to just think about what the narrative's going to be coming out into the media while this IPO is swirling. Because so much of not only stocks, but IPOs, et cetera, is just like, what are the narratives we tell ourselves about a company? Even more so when they haven't been public, so there's not as much public information out there. I'm really curious, you know, what is the main narrative going to be coming out about ARM? Because one of the things that, you know, I've been researching on now as we've been preparing for this episode is there does seem to be a need to inject more capital into ARM. Obviously, that's why they're doing the IPO, to invest in new tech, new products, new designs. And so how are you going to craft that narrative? I think you need to be telling the market, this is what we're shooting for. This is sort of the end product that we're wanting to bring out, and we need that investment to do this.
Yeah, I think some really good points. I think like a lot of people see what the semiconductor is, or the semiconductor business and the industry is at the moment. I don't think it's that contrarian to say like this business is where the future is going to be. And that's why you have businesses like TSMC, Nvidia doing incredibly well, or have done incredibly well historically in public markets. I think Nvidia is a good example of what success could look like for a business like ARM. And, you know, while they do compete, they also don't compete. Like there's lots of examples of like Nvidia systems on a chips using ARM processors. Like they'll build like a system on a chip, which is like your CPU, your GPU, you know, et cetera, or your memory controllers onto one chip. So it just like streamlines the design of a motherboard. And they'll use an ARM CPU and an NVIDIA GPU to make a NVIDIA system on a chip. That's just an example of like how they've worked together closely. I think the narrative point is super interesting. And I think the narrative around it is, you know, where we're just the business that powers all your devices. And it's one of those like ubiquitous companies that just happens to be everywhere and no one really sees it. Like they play in a very different space to NVIDIA, where NVIDIA is focused on high performance. And now they've decided to play in that space. And they're going to really benefit from this like huge data crunch in AI because people need high performance GPUs to do machine learning. Whereas I don't want to call it high volume, low value, because it is still high value and it's still high volume. But relative to something like NVIDIA, you probably see it more like a commoditized business, which is why they have their adjacent like co-design businesses. And I'm not, this is not me saying that it's a commoditized business, because it's not. It's obviously a very specialized business. But relative to, say, a highly specialized, high-performance GPU designer like NVIDIA, you can see how they start to play in very different spaces.
Yeah, this might be a good spot, Albert. We're talking a little bit before we started recording the pod, and you're laying out, you know, some of the different strategies, but essentially how ARM positions its product compared to NVIDIA. So you're talking about how they're licensing out. Do you want to just explain that a little bit for listeners? Because that I think is a real key point to understanding ARM as a business and what their value is.
Yeah, it's a good question. So ARM, they're chip designers. They design CPUs, GPUs, systems on a chips. And so what they do is they've put out their IP. You can think of it kind of like a content business where they've got all this different intellectual property, and that intellectual property, instead of being some sort of Netflix show, it just happens to be the design for a computer chip. And so if you're looking to build electronics, you need a computer chip. You can take one of ARM's designs and use that, or you can co-design something with them based on one of their existing designs. And in order to do that, ARM charge a licensing fee, kind of like subscription fee to use their design. And the way that subscription fee works, it's, you know, a charge per month or per year for how long the contract is. And then there's also a royalty structure within that based on how many products you ship using that design. So, for example, you'd pay a licensing fee for a number of different years to be able to use that design. And then you also have to pay a royalty fee, say like 1 cent per device. And I think when they were doing it with Apple, for some of their earlier chips, they were paying like 3 cents per device. Imagine how many iPhones you sell in a year, you times it by three. It's kind of like free money for not really doing anything, right? You make the design once, people leverage your design, you get to print money. Obviously, there's a lot of work that goes into the design. So that's kind of one of the first ways they make money. The second way is a bit more technical, so I might kind of strip it back a bit. But in order to actually have the hardware of a device and the software device speak together, you need a set of instructions. So imagine if you've got like an IKEA table and you're trying to put it all together. Let's say that's your MacBook. You need to get the instructions right. Otherwise, your table's not going to look like it shows on the IKEA box. So ARM also provide a set of instructions for how their processor works with different software architectures and different types of software. And knowing how the instructions work means you can utilize it effectively, means you can make it more efficient, you can customize it. In order to actually get access to the instructions, ARM also licensed that out. So they've got this duality of like, we'll give you the design. It's going to cost you money over a long period of time. Also, if you want to learn how to use it properly and customize it and get the instructions for the architecture, they call these ISAs, instruction set architecture. It actually also costs you money. So they've got this dual business model of like, the design costs you money, and then learning how to use it and the instructions for how your software controls this hardware also costs money, which I think is a genius model.
Yeah, so to just take that model and give an example to it, there's a chip which, you know, if you've got a Mac laptop, you know, that's what I'm on at the moment. Albert, I'm not sure if you're on one at the moment.
Yes, running the M1 Ultra, I think.
Yeah, but in a bunch of Mac laptops and other devices, a chip called the A12Z, this is actually a ARM design, which has then been taken by Apple and made into its own, you know, sort of original design for the purposes of its product. So you can think of ARM sort of as the base design, and then Apple has used that instruction booklet you're talking about, Albert, to tweak, adjust, make the design its own into this A12Z chip. And the performance that it provided meant that when comparing those A12Z chips to their predecessor, Apple were claiming at the time that it saved them as much as 60% on production costs, essentially in terms of getting the performance out of these devices that they need compared to the previous one. So that having the right design really drives cost benefits. And if you can think of Apple in using some of these designs, saving, you know, 60% of production costs, if those claims are correct, that's the reason why they're totally happy to take a 3 cents on the nose of every device as a royalty fee, because they're making that up in spades on their production costs. And that's, I think, the other reason why we don't hear about ARM every day, because ARM is very much a B2B, a business-to-business play. So if you're not in that space, then they don't really, you're never really going to interact with ARM. They're not selling to end consumers. They're selling to the Apples, the Teslas, the Amazons, trying to get inside their products and create value for them as a business.
For sure. I think a really good example of how high quality what they produce is every time a MacBook is released, especially recently with the M1 chip, people always talk about this amazing battery life. And, you know, we're obviously both on our M1 MacBooks. We can talk about how incredible the battery life is. The reason why Apple products, especially lately, have had such amazing battery life is because ARM chips are designed to be more efficient than most other chips. So there's like a really good example when, if you go into the history books and learn about ARM, is that one of their designers at the start of the company formation actually turned off the power supply to the chip, and it was still running efficiently because it was like leveraging the remaining power that each of the other connections to the chip was using. And so it can basically run super efficiently, which makes it perfect for mobile devices, but also makes it, you know, really great if you're using a laptop device and other handheld devices.
But as we start to finish up, what do you want to turn to next? What do you want to finish up on?
Look, I think we talked about the IPO. We've talked about what ARM is. I think it's probably just really worth talking about like where ARM sits in like the hierarchy, because we've spoken about other episodes. Well, we've spoken other episodes about Samsung, TSMC, Nvidia, and now we've done ARM. So we've probably covered, you know, almost the entire semiconductor industry, except for maybe Texas Instruments, which is like the big
and
US.
And Intel,
that's true. And Intel, who can forget Intel, the failing kind of semiconductor business. But, you know, I wanted to quickly ask you, like, you know, let's project out like 10 years. Like, do you see ARM being one of these like giants, or do you see it kind of going to the sidelines?
Yeah, a great question. You know, I always think this is where being a retail investor or a retail pundit or whatever is very different, I think, to the conversations that happen on the inside. And maybe if I can flip it back to you, Albert, just very quickly, you know, if you're in one of these businesses, do you think it's better to be public or better to be private? Just like if funding injections is not an issue, but just broadly, would you rather be private or public?
Oh, you'd rather be private, 100%.
Yeah, I agree. And so to me, that suggests something which isn't insurmountable. There are many examples of public companies which do absolutely great and go on gangbusters. But to me, it's clear that if ARM had a choice, they would have preferred to stay private. They obviously pursued the acquisition with Nvidia before going to the IPO route. So there is a whiff of not desperation, but this is probably plan C for ARM. And that's telling because it means that they might not be in a horrible position, but they're not in an optimal position either. So if I'm projecting out forward, Albert, I think realistically there are challenges for ARM. I mentioned one, which is I think they do have to innovate their product, which is why they're looking for investment, which is why if Nvidia acquired them, Nvidia was going to have to front up a bunch of money to reinvest into the business. Because ultimately, if your business is founded on, we've got this great IP, which we're selling to everyone, at some point, if no one wants that IP, in which case there's other designs which people are using, they find are better, then you've got an issue. And for them, I think that you can't just be in the tech business broadly without innovating your product, because there's going to be competitors that come and have a better product out there. So that's where I see a key challenge for ARM. So if I'm projecting out, what, 5, 10 years, to me, like, there's just not enough information to make the call, because you really want to make that call once they've got the money in the door and you start to get a sense of what they're doing with that money. At the moment, it's really too early to tell. That's a cop-out answer, I know.
No, I think you're right, though. Like, if you were to go public at any point, why would you go public right now, which is like one of the worst years to go public, right? Like, interest rates are only going up. Like, people are pretty spooked. Economic conditions aren't good. You know, tech companies are cutting back on spend. And so it's not a very good market to go public. And yet they are committed to going public, or the CEO says that they're committed to going public, which I think is a tell in terms of, obviously, SoftBank's trying to get a bit of money back. And this is a decision that, you know, SoftBank are heavily influencing. And so I think you're right. There's probably a bit of turbulence that's probably coming its way, at least in the short term.
Any last comments before we wrap, Albert?
No, I mean, I like that we've done, implicitly, kind of done this semiconductor series. I think definitely check out Samsung, TSMC, now Nvidia, and now we've done ARM. So I think if you want a good overview of the different players in the semiconductor and how they compete and operate, definitely good to check out those other three episodes.
Okay, Albert, let's finish up there. Thank you for listening to the East Meets West podcast. As I'm dialing in from Indonesia and Albert's dialing in from Australia, East truly meets West. Check us out again next week, and we'll see you then. Thanks again. See ya.